Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and in this segment we're going to continue with our analysis and excerpting of the book Blood Oath, subtitled The Conspiracy to Murder Nicole Brown Simpson. The book was co-authored by Stephen Wirth and Carl Jaspers, published in soft cover by Rainbow Books, copyright 1996. This book presents a scenario in which an elite group of white supremacists, and in particular a six-man elite strike team, about which we'll have more to say in a minute, did the actual murders of Nicole Brown Simpson and Ronald Goldman, framed O.J. Simpson, in order to basically accomplish a number of things. This was, according to the account presented here, a Nazi psyop intended to split the races, perhaps in preparation for igniting a race war, to discredit and alter the judicial system, and to discredit law enforcement in general and the LAPD in particular, also to alienate officers in such a way as they would become further recruits to the white supremacist cause. One of the suspicions that I had long held concerning the O.J. Simpson case was the possible involvement of Nazi or white supremacist officers with the framing of O.J. Simpson. Indeed, there is a history of white supremacist and Nazi activity within the ranks of L.A. law enforcement. What we're going to look at now is the recruiting efforts of a white supremacist and a Klan leader named Dennis Mahone, M-A-H-O-N, within the ranks of L.A. law enforcement. Reading now from Blood Oath. On Saturday, April 20th of 1991, the Los Angeles Times published an article entitled "Klan's Attempt to Recruit Police Probed," unquote. The White Knights, a faction of the Kansas City, Missouri Ku Klux Klan, were actively recruiting members of the Los Angeles Police Department. The leader of the White Knights, the Imperial Dragon Dennis Mahone, was quoted from a telephone interview, quote, "Recruitment applications had been mailed to several LAPD divisions, to individual officers at the stations, and to some officers' homes," unquote. He stated that he had received about 50 responses from officers asking for more information. A handful returned filled-in applications. Moreover, he said, if, quote, "they, cops, see Police Chief Daryl Gates hammered, then you're going to see a lot of guys join up," unquote. Mahone was alluding to the demand that Gates should resign after the beating of Rodney King by four white officers. Mahone, who has an office and followers in Tulsa, Oklahoma, made the following chilling statement, quote, "We're the most violent Klan in America, and we are trained in counterinsurgency," unquote. Continuing his recruitment in November of 1991, Dennis Mahone traveled to an area near Koenigs Wusterhausen in Germany to organize German skinheads. In a speech he bellowed, quote, "Race, nation, family, Sieg Heil," unquote. Well known to all were a series of trials in Los Angeles following the riots and their accompanying investigations. Equally publicized was the resignation of Police Chief Daryl Gates. We're going to have more to say about Dennis Mahone later on in the program. Suffice it to say that he is among the white supremacists whose alleged links to Timothy McVeigh are being probed. Certainly McVeigh was an acquaintance of his, according to information presented by McVeigh's counsel. We've touched, in fact, on the alleged Dennis Mahone connection in an article that from the Los Angeles Times that I read this past winter. I would also note that there is indeed a history of white supremacist activity within the ranks of L.A. law enforcement. I've noted in the past a group called the Vikings, basically. A discussion of the Vikings is presented in Blood Oath as follows. An investigation into possible racist deputy gangs focused on the Linwood Station, where allegations were made by the Long Beach Press-Telegram and other newspapers. In a lawsuit brought against the County of Los Angeles by the plaintiffs, Judge Thomas Hatter found in Thomas, and that gives the court name, findings of fact and conclusions of law that, quote, "Many of the incidents which brought this motion involved a group of Linwood area deputies who were members of a neo-Nazi white supremacist gang, the Vikings, which exists with the knowledge of departmental policymakers." So again, there is a history of white supremacist activity within the L.A. Police Department. Note, in particular, Dennis Mahone and his White Knights group. Note Mahone's connections with German fascists, networking between American and European fascist groups, German in particular, is something I discussed I have discussed in numerous programs, including the aforementioned Specialized Knowledge and Abilities series. According to the informant codenamed Skinner, who basically broke this information to the authors, the White Knights and Dennis Mahone were far more successful in recruiting L.A. law enforcement officers than the authorities in Los Angeles were aware of. Skipping down, we read, and this is quoting someone named, the Deliverer here. Again, all of the white supremacist members of CAUSE are identified by code names only. Quote, "Now, I didn't call this meeting to plan the ultimate party without doing a little preliminary investigating. We all remember when the White Knights recruited some of the Los Angeles police officers in 1991, and how that other nigger lover Danny Welch, the director of Klan Watch, claimed only a handful of the officers had joined. Well, he was wrong. He'll need more hands than he's got attached to his effing body to count the amount of cops within the LAPD and the Los Angeles Sheriff's Department that are on our side. By the time the dumb sons of expletive deleted started to realize white power was among them, it was too late to do anything but appoint that liberal ex-judge Colts to try to get our people out of the L.A. Sheriff's Department. We've even got sheriff's deputies inside the court system watching judges. Quote, he may have made some noise, but our numbers have grown, especially after that nigger Rodney King suit against the city and LAPD officers. You'd think it couldn't get much better, but it does. I made some discreet inquiries, and the response I got only convinced me further that this action was destined to occur. Not only do police officers exist within the LAPD who know Simpson, but they have access to information about published and unpublished abuse cases that name him. It gets even better. There are friendly officers in the exact station house which would probably respond to the murder. If it appears that I can't control my exhilaration, that's because of some of the preliminary information that I've already received. We've got access to the LAPD computer databases via our moles, and their information is priceless." Unquote. So again, white supremacist moles within LA law enforcement, according to the account presented by Skinner, were providing field-level intelligence to the CAUSE strike team for Operation Thunderbolt. Continuing, "Simpson has been divorced from his wife since October of 1992, and there are some 911 tapes that will target him and provide a motive. The LAPD is filled with guys who would like to retire with the big celebrity homicide arrest under their belt. They'll make sure that the investigation points towards Simpson from the get-go. They said the new DA Garcetti doesn't want any foul-ups by the prosecution in any future cases. They've been burned in so many high-profile cases, they'll want to tie this one up as quickly as possible, especially when they'll have an avalanche of evidence waiting to seal the nigger's fate. We've got the perfect Trojan horse inside the police department. I think this one guy wants to do this more than we do. He keeps supplying information and ideas as if he was an encyclopedia filled with knowledge about Simpson. He hates O.J.'s guts." And again, note that according to the account presented by Skinner, this operation relied in part on white supremacist officers allied with this outfit within the very station house that would respond to the murders. Also, these officers the unnamed Trojan horse continued to provide field-level intelligence to the conspirators even after the initial decision to go forward with the operation was presented. Returning once again to Blood Oath, quote, and this is quoting the Deliverer once again. Again, the Deliverer is described here as a former very high-ranking military officer who is the leader of the group and the contact between this blind cell and the generals, their superiors within the organization, and also the unnamed foreign terrorist group, probably German, that was providing them with unlimited financing. Quote, "Our contacts in Los Angeles reported a very important incident had occurred. It drives another nail into O.J.'s coffin. On October 25th, not too long after our last meeting, Another 911 call was recorded from Nicole Simpson, which described the nigger busting down her door at Gretna Green Way and the cops responding. This is going to be a pleasure. Taking out these two birds with one stone is worth all the planning and effort. So again, according to the account presented here, field-level intelligence was continued to provide, was provided to the conspirators even after the initial go decision had been made. It should also be noted that, one of the major roles of the white supremacist officers allied with this operation or involved with it, and by the way, their identity is unknown to the strike team itself. Again, this was a blind cell. One of the goals was to initially point the investigation in the direction of O.J. Simpson. Returning to Blood Oath, the deliverer replied quickly, quote, "I guess you forget about our kinsmen inside the LAPD and the LASD. We can't forget about our Trojan horse we talked about. Those kinsmen have been extremely active in our behalf," unquote. For the first time, a clearly audible murmur rose. It was electrifying to hear. And indeed, the Trojan horse and the officer, or perhaps officers, it's unclear, because the exact identity of the dark German, as he is codenamed, and apparently officers from the station house that would respond to this killing, or an officer, was the individual or perhaps a group of people who led the investigation in the direction of O.J. Simpson. And again, in the previous segment, we talked about the dark German and the secret that he had told the generals and the deliverer that would blow the lid off of the LAPD. I suspect, but cannot prove, and Stephen Worth agrees, that that may very well be Furman and the Furman tapes. But again, I want to stress that that is conjecture and has not been proved. Also alleged by Skinner is that some of the white supremacist officers allied with cause and allied with this operation delivered a warning to O.J. Simpson. And again here, quoting the deliverer, quote, "Now get this, some of our sympathetic LAPD detectives have warned O.J. Simpson that his life is in danger. So what does he do? It's insulting enough that this nigger is responsible for bringing mud children into our world, but this mother bleeper spends time raising money for the Zogs," and it refers to O.J. Simpson's apparently having raised money for various Jewish charity causes. And so again, according to the account presented here, these officers actually delivered a warning to O.J. Simpson. That in and of itself has not been confirmed, but there is an account from a printed source that maintains that O.J. Simpson was indeed warned that a KKK-type group was after him and was threatening him with death. Returning to Blood Oath, this was corroborated by Cato Kalin in the book The Whole Truth by Mark Elliott, pages 244 and 5. Quote, O.J. told Cato he was worried about what he referred to only as, quote, some KKK group, unquote. He believed they were out to get him. Several times during the months Cato lived at his house, he told him about a group he knew of that hated blacks and Jews, and because he was black and an active fundraiser for several Jewish charitable organizations, he was a top target on their hit list. He was convinced that his life was in danger and that they wouldn't rest until he was dead. He told Cato he had heard about this from several of his detective friends and that the FBI had also been in contact to warn him. As a result, he said, he was constantly in fear of being hit. He said he told Nicole about it, but that she didn't believe him. One wonders, and again, this is pure conjecture, whether that might have had something to do with the stiletto knife that O.J. purchased. And still more about the threats against O.J. Simpson from white supremacist groups. Again, whether or not it was the detectives alluded to in that account that I read earlier remains to be determined. Returning once again to Blood Oath. The lack of recognition for Singular's book, and by the way, this alludes to the book Legacy of Deception by Stephen Singular, which presents a very similar and related scenario for the O.J. Simpson frame-up. Stephen Singular was the author of the book Talk to Death about the Order's murder of Alan Berg, the 10th anniversary of which, Operation Thunderbolt, the murder of Nicole and framing of O.J. Simpson, was meant to observe. And Steven Singular was contacted by, again, an anonymous informant within the L.A. legal system who contacted him specifically because of his work on the order and the murder of Alan Berg. And this source said that now neo-Nazis were not just on the fringes of society, but were working from within the system and doing a great deal of damage. I would say that's something of an understatement at this point. Returning once again to Blood Oath. The lack of recognition for Singular's book and the behavior of Geraldo Rivera form one more significant coincidence, that of the media continuing to ignore information that doesn't fit its theories. During a recent Geraldo show, Mark Elliott, author of Cato Kalin, The Whole Truth, called in to discuss the Cato tapes. Elliott reported for the first time that Cato told him O.J. had received threats from a neo-Nazi group. Previously, on page 244 of his book, Elliott reported only that Cato had mentioned O.J. was aware of a threat from, quote, some KKK group, unquote, and that the group, quote, hated blacks and Jews, and he, O.J., was the top target on their hit list, unquote. So again, whether those threats were delivered by the officers remains to be determined. I've also noted in the past, in connection with Mark Furman, that there were allegations that he was the de facto head, and this again from LAPD personnel files, quoted by Newsweek magazine. There were allegations from other officers that he was the de facto head of a white supremacist group within LAPD called WASP, or White Anglo-Saxon Policemen. I've also noted that, as have many others, that he retired to Sandpoint, Idaho. That's up in Aryan Nations country. Also, that small town of 5,200 not only has an identity Christian congregation headed up by a guy named Dave Barwell, but also is home to the newly retired Lewis Beam. Lewis Beam, a top Aryan Nations official, and the author of the Leaderless Resistance Strategy of Forming Small Underground Cells to Wage a Violent War Against the System. The coincidental, if indeed that's what it was, retirement of both Lewis Beam and Mark Furman to Sandpoint is discussed here. Returning to Blood Oath, a series of coincidences involved Sandpoint, Idaho, and one Lewis Beam. Sandpoint appears to have developed a magnetic appeal, attracting individuals from our nation as a there's a misprint here. A series of coincidences involved Sandpoint, Idaho, and one Lewis Beam. Sandpoint appears to have developed a magnetic appeal, attracting individuals that our nation as a whole has been more than willing to give up. Was it pure coincidence that Lewis Beam, a fantastically effective organizer for the Aryan Nations, retired here at about the same time as Mark Furman? Lewis Beam, a friend of Richard Butler, the founder of the Aryan Nations, was a charter member of its splinter group, The Order, founded in 1983, after Butler called for a racial holy war. The Order was responsible for the murder of Denver radio talk show host Alan Berg a year later. Klan Watch credits Beam with the group's recent comeback through the use of such rhetoric as, quote, "Get ready for what we know is coming. Everyone talks of a race war. How many guns, bullets, food, training, preparations have you made? Our forefathers built this country with courage and blood. It will take fresh blood, but by God, a lot of it will be the blood of our enemies. Get ready," unquote. And, also noted is a point system that Lewis Beam discussed. This from the Klan Watch intelligence report, maintaining that Mr. Beam spoke as follows. In their October 1995 edition, Lewis Beam created an assassination point system in 1983 that was used to reward Aryan Nations warriors who kill enforcement officers, that's policemen basically, federal officials, civil rights leaders, and other, quote, enemies, unquote. The Order adopted Beam's point system to motivate its members. So again, whether or not it's a coincidence, Lewis Beam, quote, retires, unquote, to Sandpoint, right about the same time as Mark Furman retires to that same area. And again, whether Mark Furman is the dark German or part of the Trojan horse alluded to in the previous accounts remains to be determined. Also alleged by Skinner is that in addition to law enforcement people, people within the forensics departments of various law enforcement agencies, and this may very possibly be LAPD, were also very much involved not only with the cause, against capital C, capital A, capital U, capital S, capital E, but involved with providing intelligence information for Operation Thunderbolt. We read, quote, "We need to get information about OJ's doctors and plan visits for checkups in talking to some forensic lab people who were kinsmen. I gained an insight into some other items that could be used in the frame. one of the guys checked a legal database he had access to. So, again, in addition to law enforcement officers, they also had access to forensics people. The next point we're going to discuss, and we've already touched on this ever so briefly in the earlier segments, concerns Skinner's contention that this particular operation was financed from abroad with unlimited financing from a foreign terrorist group. Repeating a brief passage from a previous segment, what made this group far more dangerous than any before was that it had unlimited financial assistance from a foreign terrorist group. I would note that in the book Unholy Alliance by Peter Lavenda, there's information related which in turn comes from the book by an order turncoat and informant named Thomas Martinez, that the order got funding from German, quote, families in Latin America. That's probably the what I call the underground Reich, the Third Reich residua, that have reformed anew in the very powerful Bormann Flight Capital Organization in Latin America. Although possibly families, I suspect that families is a code word. More about the unnamed foreign terrorist group, and from the passage I'm about to read you, I suspect that it is German, although there is no proof of that. After this Operation Thunderbolt was successfully concluded, the commanding officer, again a former high-ranking military officer codenamed the Deliverer, died under strained circumstances after contacting and meeting with the foreign terrorists who had financed them. It was the belief that something had alarmed these people about the Deliverer and that they eliminated him in order to hide their own identities. Again, from the context here, I suspect that the backers were German Nazi terrorists, quite possibly connected with the residual Third Reich elements in Latin America. Returning to Blood Oath, by the way, Margie is the widow of the Deliverer. Between sobs, Margie told us how, even though the generals were satisfied with our results, the foreign group that had supplied the funds for the operation grew concerned because of the international notoriety the case was gaining and how the tide of world opinion was turning. She was able to piece together, from some of the phone conversations she overheard, how a race war the backers were conducting in their own part of the world was causing an image problem with the U.S. and its allies. Again, I suspect that is that implies that the backers were German Nazis, possibly with the roots going all the way back to the Third Reich. Again, they shortly after German reunification, Nazi elements in Germany became resurgent and began conducting some highly visible pogroms against immigrants, foreigners, and others. That did indeed cause an image problem with the U.S. and its allies. Beginning again, she, that's Margie, the Deliverer's widow, she was able to piece together from some of the phone conversations she overheard how a race war the backers were conducting in their own part of the world was causing an image problem with the U.S. and its allies. She was sure the backers had killed her husband to silence him. They didn't know how truly committed he was. He would never have come forward about the assassination without their approval. She said he had secretly left the country via Canada to meet with them. She didn't know who they were. They were known only to the Deliverer. Now, crying openly, Margie choked on her words. Quote, he called and said he now feared for his life. It was something they found out, but he didn't know what it was. He was flying back to Canada immediately. That was last Thursday. He never made it back. I got an anonymous telephone call on Sunday. The voice said he died of a heart attack, but I know better. Her eyes took on a glassy stare, as if she had been at his side when it occurred. His heart was as sound as any man's here. And again, the Deliverer was the go-between between this blind cell and its foreign backers and its superiors within the organization. One of the strategic advantages of the blind cell is that it makes it very difficult for an operation to unravel past a point. And also, if for any reason a given cell needs to be cauterized from the other organization, the leader, the contact man, can be disposed of, as apparently the Deliverer was, for whatever reason. Again, I've noted that the blind cell organizational methodology has long been used by fascism in general and Nazism in particular, going all the way back to the Hitler period in Germany. I've discussed that in the September 20th, 1992 installment of RFA 37. I've also discussed it at great length in the miscellaneous archive show Why Johnny Can't Identify Il Duce. In Blood Oath. The authors further relate the blind cell methodology, again central to Lewis Beam's leaderless resistance philosophy or methodology. And they're quoting here from Morris D's newly published book, Gathering Storm, America's Militia Threat. And it describes how hate groups use the blind cell concept. This is not to say that all or even most militias are necessarily hate groups. I've made my feelings about the mixed bag that I believe the militias are in the past. Many of them are sincere and genuinely patriotic people. Many of them are sincere conservatives. However, there are also a great many Nazis and fascists and hate groups within that milieu. And I personally think that the militia groups themselves have been irresponsible, and the related patriotist networks have been irresponsible in not taking more cognizance of that. I think they've also been opening themselves up to a lot of serious grief eventually down the line. Wouldn't surprise me if white supremacist organizations and perhaps this cause group, if in fact such a group exists, because bear in mind this information comes from an anonymous informant, were intending to inflame and divide and polarize the militia/patriot networks, much as they have intended to and apparently succeeded in dividing and inflaming and polarizing the law enforcement community as well. Of the cell, the blind cell methodological organization, we read in Blood Oath, the original meeting of the cause group, right, it says, his description fits the operation of cause to a T. The original meeting on October 9, 1993, consisted of a supercell of 15 members. Only one, the deliverer, had contact with or knew the identities of the generals. None of the members outside of the deliverer and the three two-man teams knew who comprised the recon and hit squad. These six, plus the deliverer, made up a typical blind cell whose members did not know the identity of the dark German or any other member or sympathizer actively assisting their mission. And again, after the deliverer was dispatched, that prevented any of the members of this blind cell from finding out anything more about the command structure behind them. In our next segment, we're going to go into how, according to Skinner, the conspirators, this elite six-man strike team, obtained a sample of O.J. Simpson's blood to be planted at the scene of the crime in order to frame O.J. Simpson. That in our next segment. That concludes this segment. My name is Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.